The Tom Woods Show, episode 2053.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, when you're on social media defending the libertarian position on healthcare, oh, you get called all kinds of fun names. Well, I've got just the antidote, my free ebook, Your Friends Are Wrong About Healthcare. Check it out at yourfriendsarewrong.com. Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. I'm joined today by Kara Schultz, who is a member of the Burnsville City Council in suburban Minneapolis. She is an elected libertarian in that position. And I want to talk about something that happened this very week. As a matter of fact, January 25th, 2022, at a special meeting of the City Council. And I'm going to let her explain the technical details of what was being discussed. But the big picture has to do with pain medication and what doctors are free to do and not to do, and what happens to them if they are perceived by the powers that be as doing the wrong thing. And then meanwhile, they're balancing all this against what is said to be protection against people getting addicted to some of these kinds of drugs. So they say that in order to fight the drug war, well, maybe we have to cast a wide net. But what that wide net is doing is also capturing a lot of people who now can't get the proper care that they need for pain management. So that's what Kara Schultz was talking about. She made a lengthy presentation with slides that was absolutely spellbinding, just astonishing. This is exactly the kind of person who makes us proud to be libertarians, honestly. Extremely well done talking about the whole issue. And it's an important issue, and it touches an awful lot of us, more than I think we realize. So let's get everything out on the table. Kara, welcome to the show.
Really appreciate you having me on.
I have a listener, longtime listener, big supporter of the show, who sent me an email basically saying, I'm not your boss, but I am ordering you to get Kara Schultz on your show and talk about what just happened at this city council meeting. So I actually watched a good chunk of it on YouTube. I mean, basically, I watched your portion at the end where you made your presentation.
Right.
And this friend of mine was with another friend who's not very political. And he said that the not very political friend was just glued to his seat by what was going on. So let's start off with, let's get the technical stuff out of the way.
Right.
Involving what exactly it was that was being, what precise measure it was that was going to take place that you guys were voting on and discussing.
Sure. Our city council had previously voted not to take the settlement money from the opioid settlement that came through. There's a pharma and then also a distributor. And so they did a mass tort, right? And so they're having everyone sign off, all of these states and their local units of government sign off on these agreements. Our council was the only city in the state to say no. And so then they extended the deadline, and we were asked by a state rep, and there was considerable pressure to re-vote, to bring this back and re-vote on the issue. And so we did have one of our council members who agreed to bring it back since he was in the voting majority. And so we brought it back for a hearing. And so that's what this was about. We were bringing this back to vote again on it. And it was an interesting situation. It got into topics that city councils don't normally deal with. And we had a lot of visitors in our council chambers that we don't normally see.
Your presentation was so detailed and effective and long. I think
yes,
it would probably be,
it was long.
I mean, compared to what you would hear from most city council members.
Right.
Now, it could well be motivated by just a pure passion for justice, unmotivated by any personal concerns, but it almost made me think, I wonder if in her life she's had any personal connection to people who have struggled with chronic pain and can't get the treatment they need. Am I right?
Oh, you are definitely right. This is an area that I have unfortunately had to deeply educate myself in and talk to many experts. And it's an issue that is unfortunately and unnecessarily constantly tied into conversations about addiction. So pain management and addiction unfortunately have been linked in our country in a way that is not real. It's not a thing. And so in this settlement, they had placed a poison pill in it. And it was that pill which was going to pit advocates and people who are advocating for people with addictions against people trying to get their chronic pain managed. And this is a continuation of something that we've seen for years. And how it touched my life is I developed stage 4 colon cancer. It was horrific. I was not expected to live. I was given a 6% chance of survival. And so far, I have beaten those odds and I am in remission. So I'm very pleased about that. But it introduced me to an entire world of cancer support, and you get to know people. And each year, it was progressively more difficult for people to get their pain managed. And so what I saw a few years ago was it was becoming so difficult that even patients who were actively dying were not having their pain managed. And so cancer patients were pooling medication to mail to them. Now, is that a felony? It is, but that's what people are being driven to do. But I'm not really seeing that too much anymore. Unfortunately, what I'm seeing from cancer patients at times when they're given no pain relief is they are either exiting treatment and going into hospice care, end-of-life care, so that they can have their pain managed, or they are taking the horrific step of getting a book such as Final Exit, and then cancer patients are pooling those very specific medications to send to them so that they can end their life.
It's unbelievable. I have some close-up experience with people who have suffered from chronic pain and not related to cancer, mm-hmm. just chronic pain. And this is an area, like if you say to somebody you have fibromyalgia, a right. lot of times that's just a catch-all for we really don't know what's wrong with you.
Right.
Just leave me alone. But at least in the old days, it was just leave me alone, but here's some palliative care for you.
Yes.
Now it's leave me alone, and if you ask me for drugs, I'll report you.
Absolutely. So what we see is there's so much regulatory interference from government between the doctor-patient relationship. I mean, we see that erode in multiple areas, but it's severely eroded in pain management, any type of pain management. And so government will place caps on what a doctor can prescribe, how much they can prescribe, how many patients they can have that have prescriptions. And then if doctors go past that, they're put on improvement plans, which really mean get under those thresholds or we will decredential you. We will disenroll you from being able to accept Medicare and Medicaid patients. We will refer you to the DEA. We will do civil asset forfeiture against your house, your car, your office. So it has been extremely punitive. And the end result of that for patients has been horrific. They're dumped. They're just cut off. They're dumped.
Yeah.
So, I don't even know what to say about that.
Right. So physicians are in a position where, I mean, I don't even necessarily blame them, where they...
No, I don't.
Danger. I mean, it'd be one thing if you got fired from your practice. Okay, I mean, that's right. horrific enough, but you can always find another one or you can open your own practice. But if you were to do something that could compromise your license, that's it for your entire career. And I just heard testimony the other day from a physician in California saying that in California, the situation is so oppressive with regard to there are people who are so-called contraindicated for the vaccines. And so under normal conditions, a physician would write a medical exemption. And they've been told that if you write an inappropriate medical exemption, that you'll have your license taken away. But there's no guidance as to what constitutes an inappropriate medical exemption.
Right.
So you have cases of physicians saying to patients, yeah, you certainly, there's a contraindication here. And the patient says, okay, where's my exemption? Oh, I can't write you the exemption.
Right.
That's the answer?
Exactly. And, you know, these types of really strong arm interference in doctors practicing giving their best effort towards their patients, their best medical knowledge forward. There is recognition by the AMA that this is an absolute crisis, especially in prescribing medication. You know, they had to come out with a resolution, and it's resolution 235. And part of it says that, you know, the position of physicians who appropriately prescribe and administer controlled substances to relieve pain should not be subject to the burdens of excessive regulatory scrutiny, inappropriate disciplinary action, or criminal prosecution. So they have recognized that this is at such a level that they had to come out extremely strong on this. And they have. But they're also, it's falling on deaf ears.
Now, obviously, all of this stuff is connected one way or another to the so-called opioid crisis. And the thing is, I learned a lot from your presentation on this, that connection is actually far more tenuous than we've been led to believe. Because my attitude used to be, when it was something that affected my own family, my attitude was, I'm very, very sorry about people who get hooked on these kinds of drugs, but that's on them. And that can't be used as a reason to prevent somebody very dear to me from getting the care, you know, the necessary care. But maybe I wasn't looking at it the right way. So talk about the things you said at the city council meeting about this.
Sure. So I guess it depends on, do you only care what substance a person is hooked on, right? And that's what people get very focused on. And even if we look at just that, really, we're talking about illegal fentanyl. We're not talking about prescription pain medication. It's illegal fentanyl. That's the crisis that we're facing. But do we just want to look at that? You know, there's a saying of, do you want to just keep pulling people out of the river, or do you want to go upstream and find out why they're falling in the first place? And I think it's important we find out why they're falling in the first place. And looking through the information by addiction specialists, 90% of all addictions start in childhood or extreme early adulthood. So that's where it's happening. The overwhelming majority of it is starting with alcohol. They're binging, they're becoming alcoholics, they graduate to drug use. It's not noticed as much when they're binging on alcohol. When parents notice it, when other people notice it, is when they graduate to other drugs. So the assumption is they got hooked on drugs. When we look at why are children becoming addicted at such a young age, it's because of untreated childhood trauma. We're basically abandoning kids. We have situations happening in families where the parents are brought to their knees, and so they are seeking appropriate help. But how we view children, we look at them and say, you know what? Children are really resilient. They'll just bounce back. But they don't. They don't bounce back. And so what's happening is we're ignoring our children. We're abandoning them to deal with things that adults can't even deal with. And then we wonder why we're having an addiction problem. Well, that's why we're having an addiction problem.
You know, as I'm listening to you, by the way, I'm thinking back to your presentation, and I'm thinking it would be so great, because that video is 5.5 hours long.
Yeah, it was a lengthy video.
If you could just isolate that portion of yours, I know there are a lot of people in the world who are in exactly this situation, suffering from chronic pain, who would benefit from the information. And incidentally, it coming from an elected libertarian official wouldn't exactly hurt our side either.
Right.
For you to do that. I mean, I would love to see this get more exposure than it'll get, you know, in the context of a 5.5 hour video of a city council meeting. It's just something to think about.
Yeah. And I have made my slide deck publicly available so that people can at least look at that.
Good.
But I will take your suggestion and we'll segment that out.
It's tremendous. Now, what is the role of the CDC in all this?
So the CDC did what government usually does. So the medical, you know, doctors, pharmacists, they had all gotten together and they had said, you know, I think we're being a little loose with prescriptions, we should probably tighten up. We don't think that it's causing the addiction, but people with addictions are more able to easily access prescription drugs. So let's tighten that up. So the CDC did what governments do. They come in late, and then they come in with a sledgehammer when all they really needed was a fly swatter. So they came up with guidelines on prescribing, and these were meant to be voluntary guidelines for doctors to use. And they were only supposed to be for when a doctor sees a new patient who hasn't yet received pain medication. Okay, well, that patient comes in, how should you interact with them? What happened with that was states and federal agencies completely misapplied those and they took them as a mandate and hard thresholds and just applied them carte blanche to all doctors, all patients. You can only prescribe this much. You can only do it for so long. And it just created disastrous circumstances. So after that happened, the CDC then came out and said, you all are misapplying these guidelines. You're using them inappropriately and punitively. Stop it. And no one would. The states wouldn't. They've incorporated, like my state, has incorporated it into state law and also into the administrative side, like 36 other states. The DEA is using it to prosecute doctors. So the CDC then said, okay, well, we're just going to rewrite these because you won't pay attention to us that even our crappy rules, and they are crappy, those guidelines are crappy, you're even using those crappy ones in an even worse way. So that's what they're in the process of doing. But in the meantime, now we have all these layers of state laws and bureaucracy and everything. And you know how it is with government. Once the bureaucracy starts churning on something, it's almost impossible to pull it back out.
Yeah. Yeah. So my understanding is they're reworking them and that by late this year, we're supposed to get the new guidelines. So I guess they took these guidelines, a number of states, and made mandates out of them.
Yeah. And they weaponized them.
Is bound to happen. And it's just it's crazy. I mean, it's like the super. For some reason, I'm thinking of a Catholic analogy, but there are people who don't understand the authority of the Pope. And so if he says, my favorite color is blue, they feel like we're all required to have blue as our favorite color. Will you people just be normal for 5 seconds?
Right.
So now one of the ways people, I guess, complied with this was to say to patients, all right, look, at the very least, we have to reduce your dosage of various things, or maybe in some cases, possibly eliminate it altogether. And this is not exactly being handled in a controlled, gradual way in some cases.
No, no. A large portion of patients are cut off, like immediately cut off because the doctors are panicked because they get a letter from the state saying, you have to get under these numbers or we're going to take action on you. And so what they do is they crash patients down in like 24 hours. About half of those patients end up in the emergency room because like, I don't care what kind of medication you're taking, heart medication, anything, thyroid medication. If it is suddenly removed, you're going to end up in the ER. That's how that works. But they're in such a panic. The even sadder part of that is after they do that, the doctors often get rid of that patient too, because they can't do anything for them and they don't want to deal with the aftermath and they can't put them back on the medication because that'll put them over their number of allowed patients. And so they just dismiss them. And now you have other doctors, 50% of doctors in the United States refuse to take on a patient who is using opioids for pain management. So now you have a patient that can't even get a doctor. They lose access to medical care for everything. They don't have a doctor and they can't get one.
Or if you have a doctor who has been treating you in that way and then declines to continue, if you then go seeking another doctor, that becomes evidence that you're out to get drugs. Yeah. And you can't do that either. Yeah.
Yes. So doctors are in a difficult bind. Patients are in a difficult bind too. Not only are they losing access, but every action they take is seen as a confirmation that they're an addict. Now, these people are not addicts. We don't say to diabetics, you have to have insulin, you addict, you. No, we understand that this is a medication that they need, to function as a normal human being. And that's what it is with pain medication. But instead, they are treated as addicts. So yes, it's seen as doctor shopping. If they speak out about it, and we do have persons who try to speak out at state legislature meetings, right? Or they go to the media with their story and they're trying to advocate either for themselves or for other pain patients. And they are then retaliated against. They may lose their job because they're seen as an addict, or they may get reported and they lose access to their pain medication immediately. We have seen pain patients that within 24 hours of either being in a news article and giving an interview or testifying in front of a state legislative body, they have their medications cut off.
Hey folks, regardless of what the politicos do in 2022, bring some joy into your life with my sponsor, Skillshare. One membership gets you thousands of inspiring classes in areas like film and video, creative writing, graphic design, illustration, music, photography, web development, business analytics, marketing, productivity, and a lot more. Pursue something you've always been curious to try or build on your existing skills to get even better. There are classes for all skill levels, and they're short and convenient for your busy schedule. I like Thomas Frank's class, Mastering Productivity, Create a Custom System That Works, because I want to maximize what I get done in the time that I set aside for work so I can likewise maximize the time I can spend with family and traveling and enjoying my life. With Skillshare, you'll create real projects and get the support of fellow creatives so you can accomplish real growth. Explore your creativity at Skillshare.com/woods, where our listeners get a 1 month free trial. That's 1 month free at Skillshare.com/woods. I think some of the folks who listen to me regularly will be surprised to hear what I'm about to say, but because of the, I wouldn't even say arbitrariness, but it is kind of arbitrary,
yeah,
of what happens in these situations. We had experiences where it clearly seemed that if you were a woman asking for these kinds of drugs, you were just not taken seriously. And I at first thought, oh, that can't be. But then it turned out that if I accompanied her to the appointment, dressed in a suit and looking professional,
yes,
we almost always got what we were asking for.
Yes.
That's a fact. I observed it with my own eyes.
Yes. Yes. There are disparities. And it's, you know, people have biases, right? We have biases that they look at women and yes, they're not taken as seriously. They're not given pain medication. But we also have some really disturbing ones. So, you know, we have a study that showed half of surveyed medical trainees agreed with this statement. Black people's nerve endings are less sensitive than white people's, and Black people's skin is thicker than white people's, and Black people's blood coagulates more quickly than white people's. And what that ends up meaning is 90% of Black patients receive less pain medication when they go in than a white patient. So there are disparities like
that. By the way, I was very surprised at that in your presentation. I mean, how recent was this survey done? Recently?
This was very recent. This was in the last few years.
That's insane to me.
Yes. When I found that information, I had to check it several times because it is breathtaking to see something like that.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. So a couple more things. You had some charts where you said, I want to take a closer look at Minnesota's numbers.
Right.
Now, obviously, Minnesota is not the whole U.S., but it seems highly likely that this phenomenon is being replicated everywhere. Can you describe for us what numbers are you looking at? What story are they telling?
Sure. Okay. So usually, and this is how people lie with numbers, right? They misrepresent. So when you see news articles about the opioid epidemic, they almost always show a pill bottle with pills, right? But if you take a deeper look at the numbers, and we did take a deep look at Minnesota's numbers, in 2020, the Minnesota overdose deaths total was 1,106. And then they say, well, opioids were responsible for 654. And the assumption that they leave you with is that those are prescription drugs. But out of those 654, remember, that's half, right? We're already at half. 539 are illegal fentanyl. 117 is heroin. Now, out of the portion that could possibly, maybe be prescription is maybe 206, but the majority of those are methadone. Now, methadone is almost never prescribed for pain. It's prescribed to help people who have addiction. So the majority of even something that could maybe possibly be a prescription is methadone. And then they have another substance as well, usually heroin or fentanyl. And then that's what the overdose is from. So when you look at those numbers, you realize that this narrative of this, you know, crisis of addiction and overdose deaths being tied to prescription drugs is utterly and absolutely false.
And that's what I was driving at early on. That initially my thought was, I'm really sorry about your addiction, but that can't be the reason that we don't get care. And then it turns out maybe the whole story collapses when you look at it more closely.
The whole story is incorrect. And, you know, people wonder why when they see this information, they're like, how did we get here? Like, how did we end up with this narrative? And we ended up with this narrative because people who are advocating for people facing addiction weren't getting a lot of empathetic response because people were like, they're doing heroin, let them die, right? And so that was the response. So then when they put forth a narrative of, you know, here you are, you're going along, you have a car crash, you have pain, you're given a pain prescription, and without even realizing it, you become addicted, and then you graduate onto other drugs. Okay, well, that was a narrative that elicited a really empathetic response in people. And so they were willing to help out. They were willing to give funds. They were willing to look at this in an entirely different manner. And so, you know, I don't blame advocates for that. They were looking for the best way that they could advocate for people facing addiction possible, but it has ended up severely distorting this conversation and creating excessive and extreme harm to people who have pain medication to be able to function and not be on disability.
I want to go back to the email that I started this conversation with from this listener, because his subject line was as follows. Last night, she lost the vote, but she started a movement. I'm going to ask you to tell me what he meant by that.
Ah, you know, I suspected I was going to lose this vote and it was going to be reversed. It is difficult as a city council when there is this level of pressure put on you to change your vote. To give people an idea, we had 4 state reps, at least 1 state senator, you know, at our meeting, like this doesn't happen. We had the assistant attorney general for the state of Minnesota. We had the epidemiologist from Minnesota Human Services and assorted other experts and persons. But I did want to make the case, and I wanted to make the case that we should not take this settlement because the settlement had language in it that increases the punitive nature against doctors and decreased access for patients. And I didn't agree with that. But there was also an opportunity. And the opportunity is we have a couple bills in front of Minnesota, HF 1851 and SF 1485. They have been introduced every single year in Minnesota, every session, and can't even get a hearing. And I did want to highlight these because they're not going to fix the situation. But what they are going to do is they're going to protect the absolute most vulnerable of pain patients, those who have intractable pain, they have rare medical conditions. Absolutely nothing else will help for them. They could die or be permanently bedridden without it. It will give a small sliver of protection to them and their doctors. It won't fix it, but it could be a start. And so we did ask every elected that was there to commit to supporting this bill. I think that's important and that's a start. But also in our community, we had a conversation that you don't normally have. And it was a more complex meeting than, you know, here's a villain, go point at him and hiss. It was a conversation really about what is addiction? How does this happen? What's happening to chronic pain patients? What's happening to doctors? How can we reverse this? So it was a far-reaching conversation. And we did have residents who were there. They did want us to take the money because it's money, right? But at the end of the meeting, they were also stating, I have a different view of all of this now than I had before.
That's great. And I mean, just one meeting, you can get people to see the world differently. That's a major accomplishment, especially in this day and age. It's a cliche now, but everybody seems to have, we've all dug our heels in on every issue.
Right.
You know, no one can ever admit, maybe I had incomplete information. And it's it's liberating sometimes to say, you know, I never really thought of it that way, or I didn't.
Exactly.
Maybe yeah. you're right. You know, sometimes it's an amazing feeling to say something that the other person is not expecting at all, which is, maybe you're right about this. I'll have to think about it, you know? And you've accomplished that. Now, I was looking online to see if you right. have a website or a social media or anything, because I know there are going to be people who are going to want to follow you, or if there are links you'd like me to share on the show notes page or anything like that, what would you like done?
Sure. So I have my political page, which is KaraSchultz.com. I'm also on Facebook, both for city council and my personal, and I put a lot of stuff on my personal as well. So I can definitely get you those links and information. And I'm pretty excited about that. I mean, I'm sure you can understand that when you're going up against the full might and power of the state, that does not make you a lot of friends in low places. So I am receiving information that I'm definitely going to be targeted so that I'm no longer on city council. But here's the thing. I don't do my job with an eye to, can I get reelected? That's not the lens I'm going to look at things through. I'm looking at it through of how can I best represent the residents of Burnsville, and how can I do this job in the best, most ethical way possible? And yes, I did lose the vote on this one. Our council did reverse. One vote changed, and that was unfortunate. And the really unfortunate part of that was our council was given incorrect information. I believe it was incorrect information, and I've heard it's been clarified by the Attorney General himself that it was incorrect information, that the settlement agreement could be amended, and no, it cannot. So that did sway the council, and I believe it changed the vote.
There are so many ways, I'm sure you know better than anybody, to spell your last name. So I'm going to spell the website for people. So it's CaraSchultz. Don't you dare put a T in there.
.com. Right.
And I'll link to all these things, including the video. I'm going to put that up there too. Just go up to like 4 hours, 20, 25, somewhere around there.
Right.
When a presentation with slides begins, you'll know you're in the right place. I'll put that up at tomwoods.com/2053. I know there are a lot of people out there who have a vested personal interest in this matter, but right. I hope the rest of you will, you know, because you're all good, empathetic people, you know, be advocates all the same for people who are in this situation, who are politically almost voiceless. They are nobody's constituency, but right. they are suffering. And the thing is, they can be helped with not that much effort. And yet it's very, very hard to get them that
right.
help.
I mean, the basic effort is leave them alone.
Yeah.
Just leave them
yeah,
alone.
Yeah, I know. That's all you have to do. That's all we're asking. Mind your yeah. own business. Mind your own business. It is amazing how many issues that applies to, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just amazing.
Let doctors use their best medical judgment. I mean, yeah. that's really what this comes down to. And we have a state and a federal government saying, no, we're not going to.
Yeah. Yeah. Crazy. Crazy. That's why when Boris Johnson in the UK recently said, we're going to trust the judgment of the English people, you know, moving ahead
right.
with COVID. And I thought, I love that sentiment. I wonder why we only trust it in 2022. Why the past 2 years, have they just had terrible judgment? I don't know.
Right.
I don't know. But at least that is the sentiment that we should be going for. And as I say, what you did at that meeting just went above and beyond anything that somebody would expect in that kind of setting. And so all of us who really do care about this issue are deeply grateful to you for doing that. So thank you for that and for being with me today.
I'm really appreciative of you having me on and getting this information about what doctors and patients are facing in our country.
Okay, folks, that's going to do it for today. Those of you who have websites I need to promote for you, do not despair. I have not forgotten you. I'll be doing those next week. In the meantime, I think given our subject matter, it might not hurt to remind you, I have a free ebook on healthcare called Your Facebook Friends Are Wrong About Healthcare. And you can get it, believe it or not, at yourfriendsarewrong.com. Wouldn't it just be satisfying to type that into your browser? Yourfriendsarewrong.com? Well, you can. And you'll have a free ebook to show for it. And you'll wind up on the coveted Woods mailing list if you do so. If you want to unsubscribe, you can do that with one click, but unless you're a crazy person, you won't want to. So head over to yourfriendsarewrong.com and I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.